Hello and welcome into this week's edition of the Rookie Stripes podcast here on Racing News Now. I'm Garth Allen, and that is Mr. Tyler Guthrie. What is going on, my dude?
It is a beautiful day to be on Earth. There are cars on track at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway today.
Oh, that's where you were going with that. I was about to be like, it is, because it's a little gloomy here and about, or is raining. I guess it did start raining. I see rain out there. Good thing I got at least a little bit of mowing in earlier.
No, but there's cars on track at IMS using the oval, and that means it's a great day to be here.
Tyler's like, I don't give a shit about your rain. It's Indy time. We're going to talk Indy.
I don't care about your rain or NASCAR or F1. We're doing the superior sport today.
You know what that means, though, since I'm west of Indy, that this rain is heading toward the track.
Oh, yeah. They're not going to do anything the rest of the day.
Are they? Do they have anything planned for the rest of the day?
Yeah, they're supposed to practice until like 6:30.
Oh, that might get a little bit in.
They're supposed to do it again tomorrow, but I think it's supposed to rain all day tomorrow. So,
yeah, well, yeah, it's probably going to start raining there shortly.
I think it already did.
Yeah, I think it might have a little bit, but there's definitely more coming. So, yeah, they're probably done for the day.
Yeah, probably.
But big news on that front. Tyler, why don't you tell us who was fast today?
Fastest or who was fast?
All of the above.
All right, so let me see if I can pull up top five real quick. Let's see here. It's making me log into the app. I've been logged into the app for like 6 years.
Tyler, unprepared as usual.
I didn't expect it to log me out of an app I've been logged into since the app came out.
Call you Ty Majeski.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see how it is. So this morning, Joseph Newgarden was fastest in the morning practice. It was like a 2.5-ish hour thing before they had all the rookies go. Kyle Larson was second fastest, and he was only able to compete in that session because he already completed his rookie orientation program.
Like, I was about to say, should he be in rookie practice?
No, he already did the ROP last year and has experience in an IndyCar this year, I think is like the quota for that. And then like people like Ryan Hunter-Reay and Connor Daly that are coming back, even though they're not competing in the full season and haven't done anything since the Indy 500 last year, they count as experienced and don't have to do the ROP. But
well,
Catherine Legg,
they do.
But Catherine Legg has to do the ROP. Doesn't really, I don't know. I haven't really read up on the requirements for that. I just know that Kyle Larson passed, and now he's second fastest in the first session on the oval track. Then Scott McLaughlin and Scott Dixon and Alex Palou are also in the top five for the morning session. So your typical suspects and Kyle Larson, which I don't think anybody's really surprised by. What I am kind of surprised by is he was the fastest McLaren car in day one.
Nice.
By a lot.
I'm going to go ahead and lock in my pick now for Kyle Larson to win the 500.
Okay. You think he can do both of them or just the one?
Well, I mean, he could do both of them. That's the thing. Like, he's good at Charlotte, so
he won, I mean, the 600
could,
what, last year?
I don't know if he's going to, but he could.
He won the Coke 600, what, last year or the year before?
I don't remember. Let's look this up.
2 years ago.
It was 21 when he won the championship. No, Blaney won the 600 last year. Hamlin won it in 22. So was it in 21 when he won the championship?
Probably. For some reason, I thought Larson won with the next-gen car.
It was 21, so no, he hasn't won.
No.
With the next gen. That was the year he won like everything en route to the championship, because that was his first year with Hendrick.
Yeah, it was Larson's Lynn Sanity season. But yeah, I mean, he's got a pretty good shot. He's just got to figure out some of the racecraft stuff, which it's Kyle Larson. I'm not concerned about it at all.
Yeah.
Tony Stewart's the only driver that has competed all 1,100 miles of the double. And I think he also got a top five in both races, the one of the years that he finished all 1,100 miles. But yeah, so big shoes to fill with Tony Stewart, who won an IndyCar championship before he went to NASCAR, and obviously was still good at IndyCar. But
well, I know he got a top five at Indy that year, I'm pretty sure, didn't he? Was that 2001?
Yes.
Yeah, he got a top five at Indy, and then his 600 that year was third.
Yeah, top five in both of them.
Yeah. Actually, I'm gonna double check the 500, because I'm not 100% sure he got a top five.
Pretty sure he did.
No, he got sixth.
Oh, okay. So top 10 in both of them. That's still, yeah. I mean, for 1,100 miles of racing in one day, and for the Coke 600, he didn't even start where he qualified. He had to start from the rear because he missed a driver's meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. Kurt Busch is the last person to attempt it, and I think he blew an engine in the Coke 600 and had a top 10 in the Indy 500. So,
what year was that?
14.
Let's see. He was sixth at Indy. And Racing Reference gets kind of annoying because every time you click on a new page, it like bounces up and down as it tries to load in ads.
Yep.
Let's see. And then the 600, he blew an engine, finished 40th.
Yeah. So I think Kyle Larson's got a shot to win both this year. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. There's a lot of good guys in IndyCar that will give him a run for his money. Also, in the world of IndyCar news this week, Prema announced that they're going to have two full-time entries for the 2025 season. If you don't know who Prema is, they are one of the top like ladder talents in the F1 world. They have had a bunch of success in Formula 2. They've had people like Charles Leclerc and Mick Schumacher under their wing.
Charles Leclerc. Sky pronounces it wrong.
Yeah, right. But Prema is a really good organization. Carlin came into IndyCar a couple years ago, and they're kind of similar. But it's like, I don't know, comparing apples to oranges, it's like saying that Hendrick is the same as RCR or something like that. Prema is a very big organization in Europe, and this is really important to the international success of IndyCar, I think. It also gives a lot of F1 ladder guys somewhere to go after they get to F2, because, I mean, there's only 20 cars in F1, and I can think of probably 12 to 15 drivers that are going to be there for at least another 5 years. So there's nowhere to go once you graduate from F2, and this gives some of those guys somewhere to go.
I mean, do you have to be affiliated with an F1 team to really have somewhere to go from F2?
To go anywhere up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. To go into F1, do you have to be affiliated with an F1 team?
I would think so.
Then what's the point in even being an F2 team that's not affiliated with an F1 team?
Because they still get a lot of money.
Okay, fair enough. But I guess,
I mean, there's Xfinity Series teams that don't have ties to Cup Series teams. Right, just run an Xfinity. Not really
the same thing, though, because you can go from an Xfinity team to a completely different Cup team, whereas you can't necessarily go from, like, apparently Prema to Ferrari or anywhere in F1 if Prema, you're not affiliated with them.
Prema is Ferrari's thing in F2, basically.
You just said they weren't affiliated.
They're not directly affiliated, but it's part of Ferrari's young driver program that you would go through Prema.
Okay, so then in that case, wouldn't any Prema drivers, as long as Ferrari likes them, graduate into Ferrari or what's Alfa Romeo now?
What, the Kick Sauber thing?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's still the junior Ferrari team.
I think technically it's Haas now.
Oh, well, okay, go to Haas or whatever.
But then the point still stands of, I mean, Ferrari's going to have Leclerc and Hamilton next year. You can't convince.
I'm guaranteeing they're regretting at this point the Hamilton decision.
I mean,
you Hamilton can make, on the back end of his career versus Sainz, who is tearing it up right now.
You can make a case there, yeah. But I would argue that Ferrari's lineup isn't going to change for the next several years at least. And Haas seems to be happy with the drivers they have. And Sauber's had Bottas and Guan Yu Zhou, however you pronounce his name.
Zhou Guan Yu.
Yeah, whatever. For however long. I mean, there's not a whole lot of moving around at the F1 level these days.
I mean, there is, not necessarily in the Ferrari camp, but it doesn't necessarily mean anybody from Prima would have to go to Ferrari, especially if they can see they're not going to get anywhere at Ferrari. You can start hustling your way with other teams and seeing where you could end up. You could go to Alpine, as bad as they are right now. You can go to, what is it, Visa Cash App RB.
Yeah, it's similar to the Joe Gibbs thing that they had a couple years ago, where they had like 30 drivers competing for 4 Cup Series spots, and there's so many talented people that are in this program, in this ladder, that just, you get to F2, and then there's only 2 spots really to go other than that. It's IndyCar and F1. And there's not very many direct European ties to IndyCar other than McLaren. And, I mean, McLaren's IndyCar team is basically just their F1 reserve drivers at this point. So, I don't know. It gives IndyCar a little bit... Yeah. Award is their reserve driver.
Right, but that doesn't mean the whole team is their reserve drivers. Like, would they put Rossi in an F1 car?
I mean, he's raced F1 cars before.
Right, but would they seriously consider him to put him in an F1 car?
I feel like in the event that both F1 drivers and Award couldn't race anymore, they would probably consider it.
Yeah, maybe, I guess. I can see the argument there.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know, though. I haven't heard any talk about, like, Rossi even being in consideration to be even, like, backup F1 driver for them. Whereas Award, that's been pretty out in the open that he might eventually go F1 with them.
Well, I think that's a difference in how they want their careers to go, too, because Rossi wants to be in IndyCar now, and he's kind of over the F1 stuff, whereas Award and Pillow want to go to F1, and kind of they're in IndyCar because they can't get there yet.
Yeah.
More so Pillow than Award, because I think Award actually likes IndyCar. Pillow's just a little spoiled brat. I think Pillow, more so than Award, is in that position where Pillow wants to go to F1 really bad and just doesn't have a spot to go to, whereas Award probably likes what he's doing in IndyCar more than he would in F1, but still wants the international attention, I would think. But I don't know, Pillow's just kind of a spoiled brat, so.
Hey, he's kicking ass in IndyCar right now.
Yeah, too bad he can't read a contract.
Right? That would that'd be a helpful thing to learn how to do.
Yeah, but if this year's IndyCar lineup doesn't change for next year, Prima coming in would make it 29 full-time entries next year.
Not bad.
You got F1 saying, oh, we can't add an 11th team because where are we going to find the garage space for 22 cars? And then IndyCar's kicking around out here in smaller tracks with 29.
I mean, to be fair, F1 does race at different tracks. I haven't really paid that close of attention to how big of garages those tracks have. There may legitimately not be room there without building extra garage space.
I would agree with you if, like, the GT series of the world didn't go to pretty much the same tracks that F1 goes to, and you know for a fact they have 40 to 60 cars showing up at those races.
But do they take up as much space in the garage as F1 teams do?
we can just make I feel him like take F1 up a smaller teams space.
Take up a lot of space. Huh?
We can just make him take up a smaller space. I mean, good I don't luck think with
teams
that.
Would be happy about that.
Probably and not.
As we know, the teams kind of run F1.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. I can't imagine an American motorsport having that sort of setup with the hierarchy there, but yeah.
Oh, no, you couldn't? Hendrick doesn't kind of run NASCAR?
No, because if they did, then they would have penalized Denny Hamlin last week.
Is that right? I mean,
Ford's the odd man out right now.
They may not run the series, but Rick knows how to get under driver's skin, a la Ross Chastain.
I don't think Ross Chastain had that thick of skin to begin with, but I see your point.
You think he's all bark, no bite?
That's what he's been so far in his career.
Yeah.
He's got, like, what, the wall riding thing at Martinsville and pissing off everybody to his fame?
I mean, his bark seems to be pretty loud if he can intimidate somebody like Denny Hamlin to the point where Hamlin hates him and is screwing up his own races to try and get him back.
I think that's just Denny Hamlin's fragile ego.
Well, that could be, too. Yeah, I could see that. But yeah, there was a lot of talk about NASCAR being rigged this week after Hendrick on their 40th anniversary. They bring these ruby red cars and all four of them are fast and they end up in a 1-2-3 finish and everybody says it's scripted and NASCAR just they wanted it to happen.
Man,
what do you say to those people, Tyler?
I just can't believe that the most successful organization at Martinsville had four really fast cars at their best track.
I know, that, right?
Mind-blowing. It's not like they won a race there last year or anything.
In a race that they knew was important to them, that they brought these special paint schemes for, and they probably put a lot of extra effort into that they usually don't put into Martinsville. They're already good at Martinsville, and then they're putting extra effort into it because they want to be good for this race. Oh, yeah, definitely rigged.
Yeah, they scripted it so hard that they made William Byron start 18th and pass everybody on a track that you can't pass and win the race.
I mean, the argument to that is you can't make it look scripted, at least from the beginning.
Right. Sorry.
I mean, if they wanted to make it look scripted, they'd all started 1-2-3-4 and they'd have been up front the entire race.
Yeah, see? I mean, they didn't even finish 1-2-3-4, so...
Well,
the script must have sucked, I guess.
I will say, though, Chase was a little almost too friendly with Byron at the end. Like, he gave him a little nudge there into one, and that's really all he did. He really didn't try to win that race that very hard.
No, but with how Chase's performance has been here recently, can you imagine if he shoved Byron out of the way and all three of them crashed?
Can you imagine how many people would have come to his defense and said it was Byron's fault?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's just how Chase Elliott is, but
it's just like Hill and Creed last year at Martinsville. How
I can't believe Creed brake checked him.
I know, right? Yeah, yeah. No, of course. That couldn't have been Austin Hill's fault.
Or like when Chase Elliott brake checked Denny Hamlin a couple years in Martinsville, yeah, the right. Same thing. Like, I don't know. I think Chase was like, I'm probably not going to win the race even if I move him. So it's probably better for everybody if I don't.
No, he probably would have won if he moved him. If he'd have gotten to the inside, he would have at least passed him. It depended on where he cleared him. If Byron had another shot to get back to his bumper, or if it ended up being Larson in second, if Larson had the opportunity to get to his bumper.
I still think Byron would have won anyway. That car was a rocket ship towards the end of that race. I mean, it was,
but if you trap him on the outside and Elliott is able to make a good enough run on the inside, he doesn't have to clear him. He just has to get arc the corner well enough on the inside and shove Byron wide on exit, and that's all he needs to do. He doesn't even have to clear him off of exit on turn four. No, he just has to get the nose in front of it.
They were side by side going into one, like, dead even, and Chase might have even been a couple inches ahead of him, and Byron still beat him off the corner and cleared him going into three.
Are we talking about the restart? When yeah. they started side by side?
Yeah. Chase Elliott was a nose ahead going into one, and then Byron right, beat him into three.
Because Elliott didn't pull the whole shove him wide on exit. Yeah. If he had done that, which he probably should have, I think we'd been talking about a different finish.
Probably, but I think for the interest of the team, not trying to shove cars off when you could have a 1-2-3 finish was probably where Chase Elliott was going.
I mean, they probably still could have gone 1-2-3 at that point. It's not like you're wrecking Byron. You just shove him up a half a lane so he doesn't have the angle on exit that he wants, and all of a sudden you go to the lead. Maybe Larson goes to second, and Byron can probably hold on to third if he falls back to there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not complaining about the finish, though. It worked out for me.
Well, yeah, it works out for Mr. Byron fan over here.
Yeah, hey, 13 wins for Byron in his career. He's the winningest driver since we got this new car.
I mean, how many of those have come in the last year and a half?
Like 10.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, once he started winning, he has he's gone on a tear.
Can't say that for Chase, though.
Right? If Byron keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to have a championship soon. It might be this year. It might not be this year, but it's going to be soon.
Yeah.
As long as this format doesn't keep screwing him over.
Well, as a Hendrick fan, unless you're a Jimmy Johnson fan, you know how that format usually goes.
You say that, and Elliott and Larson have both won under this format.
Elliott shouldn't have won his at all.
No, I agree, but they didn't get screwed over by the format. In fact, Elliott benefited from the format. Larson should have won that championship either way, this format or not. He was clearly the best car in 2021 by far. But
I just remember being a Jeff Gordon fan in the late 2000s, and they started doing the Chase format, and it's like, well, this sucks.
That's a completely different format, though.
I know.
Like, technically, it's the postseason, but it's completely different from what we have now. Yeah. I'd rather go back to that format, to be honest. If we've got to have some form of a postseason, that was so much better than this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really preferred that format. Tony Stewart preferred that format for a year, too.
Yeah, yes, he did. Well, was it one? No, he got two championships under that format.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
Well, no, similar formats. It was basically the same format with different number of drivers. Because 05 and 11 were basically the same format, just with different number of drivers making the chase.
He won three championships, right?
Right. 2002 was under the old format, the season-long points.
Oh, okay. Eh.
Yeah.
I didn't hate that point system. It was just, it's the same problem that I had with this one, where you just do well enough to get there for this whole season, and then the end of the season, have a couple good races, and wow, you're the champion, wow.
Yes and no. The biggest difference with that format and this one was you didn't have rounds, you didn't have guys getting eliminated, you didn't have win and you're into the next round. Literally all it was however many drivers made it into the postseason, that's the drivers competing for the championship. They reset their points with 10 to go, and you basically have a separate 10 race season with those drivers and everybody else still on the track. Versus, well, we're eliminating three drivers after three races, but if you win a race, you're automatically into the next round no matter what you do in the next two races. There's so many overarching complicated scenarios in the current format, whereas the other one, make it in to the top 10, 12, whatever it was for that format, and race the other 9, 11 drivers, however many, for the final 10 races.
Yeah, it still kind of rubs me the wrong way how, to me, it makes it seem like the races in the beginning of the season don't really matter. If you get what I'm saying, because
I mean, they do more with that format than they do now, because you didn't have win and you're in with that format.
Right.
So you still had to have a level of consistency to make it into the chase. If you had a very bad start to the season, you were digging yourself out of a hole, and a win or a few wins wouldn't necessarily dig you out of that hole if it was deep enough. Or if you had a really good start to the season, won a bunch of races, you're way up, and it takes a lot to get you out of that. But it's not impossible that you miss the playoffs if you win 5 of the first 7 races or whatever, if you really go on a bad streak after that. So that's why I like it more, because you don't get locked in ever in that format. Sure, you can have a really good start to the season, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're in the postseason.
Yeah, just that original chase format was kind of the start of a slippery slope that led us to where we are now, which it is what it is. But
Brian France was the start of a slippery slope that led us to where we are now. Everything, all of the gimmicks that were put in, and I say gimmicks, gimmicks doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. It's just all the stuff that they've added, stages, playoffs, everything that's been added. Those were all from the mind of Brian France, Mr. Getting arrested for DUI and drug possession 3 hours away from Chase Elliott's first win. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, some things, like stages on mile-and-a-half tracks, I would be okay with. But, I mean, there's a lot of things that they put in that I'm just not a fan of.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't necessarily mind stage points. I just don't like the caution for the end of the stage. And we almost got to the point where we got rid of that. Was that last year when we got rid of the stage cautions at road courses?
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, we're going to bring them back. We didn't need to get rid of those. Why?
Well, they asked their fan council.
Yeah, with a leading question that got them the answer of, yes, bring the cautions back.
Would you rather have stage cautions or no race at all? Well,
it was probably something similar to that. It wouldn't surprise me.
And then the three random people that they picked that don't even watch NASCAR are like, race, I guess.
Yeah, right. And apparently they don't even listen to the driver council.
Oh, why would you?
Right?
When the whole thing's rigged and scripted anyway.
I mean, to be fair, I don't know that you should always listen to the driver council 100%, given how many of them were bitching after Bristol and how great Bristol actually was.
How many, like, who was actually bitching about it? Because I heard most of, like, the...
All, immediately after the race, pretty much all of them were.
I feel like that was just kind of a instant reaction of, my tires suck today, and I wasn't ready for it. Well,
Larson's quote after the race when TV interviewed him was, it was fun, but I never want to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really what you want to hear.
No.
I like Larson, but sometimes when things don't just get handed to him, he has very bad reactions. Same as Chase Elliott. Like, I don't know.
It's a Hendrick thing.
Two of the four Hendrick guys just have really bad reactions to everything.
I think it's all of Hendrick.
Bowman doesn't react to anything. You
don't see it with Byron, but
it's all. At least Byron pretends to be happy.
Did he pretend to be happy when he won the Daytona 500?
I was more emotional than Bowman was.
I mean, fair, but...
But so is a rock, I guess, but...
Yeah. I didn't know Dwayne Johnson was in NASCAR.
Mount Rushmore showing more emotion than Alex Bowman after narrowly losing the Daytona 500.
That's right. That's wild to me how just, like, stone-faced he was after that race. Like, did not care that he had lost the biggest race of the season.
Well, it just goes to show how much this playoff format has belittled every other race on the calendar. It doesn't matter if you can't win at Phoenix.
No, it really doesn't. Well, it doesn't matter if you can't win at Phoenix and one of the races in the round of 8. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Because realistically, you probably have to win in the round of 8 to make it to Phoenix. But you really don't have to win in the round of 12 or the round of 16. And most of the time, you really don't have to win in the regular season if you have a consistent enough season running up front.
Well, and really, what, there's 3 races in the round of 8?
Yeah.
So really, you don't even have to win in a round of eight either.
You don't have to, but only one driver can make it that doesn't win. So odds are you do really probably have to win in the round of eight. Because yeah. one bad race and the other four guys that don't win are going to be in front of you.
That's true, yeah.
So, yeah, you got a hole to dig out of. So, you really, more than likely, you have to win in the round of eight. You really can't coast through the round of eight. You can, but you shouldn't bank on that.
Yeah, it just goes to show like how unimportant every other race in the season is. Because, I mean, Daytona 500, guy that barely finished second, probably could have, should have won, was like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
The guy that won is like, oh, this is cool. I want to do that for a while. Whatever.
I mean, at this point, it's literally a four-race season. Vegas, Homestead, Martinsville, Phoenix. Those are the only races that matter.
I hate that Vegas is on that list.
I know, right? It wasn't until this year.
I don't like Vegas anyway. Then I watched the Dan Weldon documentary that came out, and I already didn't like Vegas, and now I just hate Vegas. So much.
I will say I'm glad Homestead kind of matters again now that it's in the round of eight. Like, it's not as important as it should be, but at least it is one of those races that you probably do have to win to make your season matter.
Can we replace Vegas with like Darlington or something?
I don't think we could have the Southern 500 that late in the year.
Don't even need to be the Southern 500. Just go there three times a year. That's the only one that deserves more than one date anyway.
Well, the problem with it, one, the Southern 500 traditionally has to be on Labor Day weekend, although I don't know why anybody cares about tradition at this point when we moved Daytona off the 4th of July and we've done everything else. So,
yeah,
tradition, I guess. But I don't know that NASCAR would put two dates at the same track that close together, unless they're like in the middle of the summer. Like, that's the only time I think I've seen them put two races that close together. Like when there was two New Hampshire races, they were like a month apart.
No, oh, jeez.
Then two Michigan races were in like June and August.
I don't really mind doing two races at tracks, but like two at New Hampshire and two at Richmond and two at Kansas, it's like, stop.
Two at Kansas, that's the best mile and a half now.
Well, it is, but it still shouldn't have two races.
You just said you don't mind two races.
Okay.
So you're telling me you don't mind two races, but the best mile and a half on the schedule doesn't need two races.
None of the mile and a halfs need two races.
Even though they're some of the best races now with this car.
Just because they built this car specifically to fit all the mile and a halfs that they built in the early 2000s.
So you would rather they get rid of the second date for all the mile and a halfs while we have a car that is best on mile and a halfs and throw them into more short tracks, road courses, whatever, where this car is terrible.
I don't care if it gets me Chicagoland back.
It probably won't get Chicagoland back. It probably won't.
I don't know. I think it's sad that we have places like Chicagoland and like other road courses that we get to go to, like Canada or Mexico, or hell, go to Japan and go to Twin Ring Matigi again. Like, we have all these options and we're going to Richmond twice.
Well, I think we're going to get back into that soon. 'Cause I know they were going to go to either Montreal or Mexico City this year. I don't know what happened with that, but I know there was a thing that came out where NASCAR had told everybody in the industry to make sure their passports were up to date. So I'm not sure why that fell through this season, but I'm going to assume it's at least one of those will be on the schedule next year. So I would think, if we get one on the schedule, we're going to start adding more. Like, let's say only Montreal is on the schedule next year. Well, maybe Mexico City comes in 2026, maybe 2027. Then we go to Motegi or wherever. Eventually, I don't think it'd be a bad idea maybe to do something in Europe, do like a combo weekend with the NASCAR Euro Series.
Yeah. I don't know what track you would do that at, but there's a whole bunch of options for that.
What's the one What's the one in England?
What, like Brands Hatch or something?
Yeah, Brands Hatch. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, do it at Brands Hatch. Boy, I know the Euro Series goes there, or at least they used to.
That would be chaotic as hell with like 40 NASCAR.
It would be fantastic.
It would be great. I would love it. It'd just be chaotic seeing them come flying over the hill.
Take them to Hockenheimring and put them on the Nordschleife version.
That's Nürburgring.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Come on, get your Germany together.
I knew it was something ring.
NASCAR's doing like 10-minute laps on the Nürburgring. Yeah. What would be like qualifying? You get race. One lap.
Yeah, 5-lap race.
I would almost pay to go over there and see that.
I know, right?
That'd be so cool.
Absolutely. I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Bust out the Le Mans car and take it to the Nürburgring.
That's right. Garage 56.
Ah, that'd be so cool. Tune in 2035 when there's a whole class of just NASCAR at Le Mans.
Tune in 2035 when NASCAR has more races outside America than they do in America.
Honestly, though, I don't even know if I'd be that upset about it.
As long as it didn't become like F1 Junior, like, because obviously that would put NASCAR on more of a world stage. But as long as they weren't like second class citizens to F1.
Yeah, I do think this new car has been good for NASCAR on a world scale, though. It got rid of a lot of the, I don't know, redneck-ish stuff from NASCAR's reputation.
To an extent, yes. I think that's still there a little bit, but yeah, to an extent, it did get rid of it.
A piece of me breaks every time I see one of the right rear toe links just snap.
Doc, please don't knock over my light. He realized he could stretch out and grab the light. And then he realized he could tip it over. So we really probably should talk about Martinsville other than NASCAR rigged it for Hendrick. So since we've already talked about Cup, we'll finish that off here. Where has Bubba come from? Bubba has all of a sudden been super fast the last few weeks.
Has it been all of a sudden, though?
I mean, it's been most of the season. I mean, yes, he's been fast, but I mean, like, he's been legit top five fast a lot of this season. And I don't know that he was top five fast most of the time last year.
Yeah, I think last year he got caught out with strategy and luck a lot of the times, but he was definitely on an upward trajectory last year, and it's just carried over to this year. And seeing him in top five, top ten, actually running there consistently, and even like the qualifying pace, I never thought Bubba was that good in qualifying, but he's qualified top five, top ten the past couple of weeks, and I think it's really encouraging to see. The only thing I'm questioning is like the difference between Bubba's pace and Reddick's pace.
Yes, I've noticed that too, and I was going to bring that up. It's kind of surprising to me that he's been so much faster than Reddick, which is funny because I think everybody, when Reddick went over there and the performance Bubba had to that point, I think everybody just assumed Reddick was going to wipe the floor with Bubba.
And everybody else.
Yeah. And Reddick was fast last year, but it's almost like it's flipped now, and Bubba is the fast one, and Reddick, he's fast, like he's top 10, top 15-ish most weeks, but he's not been up in the top five racing for wins like Bubba has most weeks. So it's very strange to me, and I'm very curious how the Bubba haters are taking this.
You're wondering how the Bubba haters are taking this. You know exactly how they're taking it.
I do. I've intentionally, well, I don't check Twitter that much or Zitter that much anyway, but I've intentionally stayed away from it because I really don't want to see what the Bubba hate is right now. Now that he's fast and he's outrunning his teammate,
it's like even NASCAR Instagram posts that are unrelated to Toyota, Bubba, black people, anything. It's like, I don't get it. I can't imagine just hating somebody that, like, I don't like Denny Hamlin, but I'm not going to go post on every NASCAR post and be like, Denny Hamlin sucks. Like, right? I don't, I don't.
On things that are completely unrelated to Denny Hamlin that have nothing to do with it.
Yeah. They post like Chris Buescher winning a race. I'm like, Denny Hamlin sucks. I'm like, what? Yeah. Get over yourself.
Right. Like, can you imagine having that sad of a life and not being able to function without posting on every NASCAR related post? Oh, I can't stand Bubba Wallace. He's terrible. I can't imagine why he's running this good right now. It's not him. It's the car.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, if for some reason I just hated the color purple so much that I just, everything that was purple, I had to look at it and be like, well, I'm not going to use that because it's purple. Mm-hmm. That sucks. You can't have it because it's purple. You got to burn that. Like, I did. I don't know. It's stupid.
It is. It's very stupid, but this is the world we live in, unfortunately.
Still, somehow.
Yeah, somehow. I don't get it. That's really all I had for the Cup race, outside of Hendrick being stupid fast in this race. All four of them, even though Bowman didn't really get the finish that the rest of them did. He was still top 10, but eighth is not the same as first, second, and third.
Did you see they're doing a four-car 124 scale set of the race? No, they're doing all four, I think.
Unless they changed it. The one I saw was they were just doing Byron, Larson, and Elliott for the 1-2-3 finish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I noticed a lot of people in the comments complaining that they should do a four-car set because they're leaving Bowman out, and it's like, well, it's a 1-2-3 finish set. If he wanted to be a part of that, maybe he should have finished fourth.
Yeah, it is just the three. That's funny. I don't need to get that, but it, you know,
it's kinda cool. Kind of am thinking I might want to get it because I feel like that is something that might be a neat collector's piece one day.
Yeah, especially since they're doing the matching DIN numbers and everything now.
Yeah, matching DIN numbers, and I think they said something about it'll have a Martinsville logo on the bottom of the car. So it'll be specifically different cars than the, like, if you bought the regular ones.
So the elites are what? 120? Yeah, they're 120 each.
Separately, and yeah.
The three of them together are 380.
Is that a set of elites?
That's a set of elites.
You said 380?
Yeah, so it's an extra $20 than if you had them all three separate.
It's $6. It's less than $7 extra per car.
That's still kind of... I hate how they price gouge everything.
Right, but, I mean, I don't feel like $7 extra is that much. I honestly figured they'd try to get more out of it than that, because if you think about it, my guess is, my hope is, that there's a special box for this, and then you got to figure they're raced versions, and they're putting the Martinsville logo on them, so there's little special pieces to it that make it specific to this. So I don't necessarily mind an extra $7 per car. Now if they made it an extra $15-$20 per car, then I'm like, I don't think that's worth it.
Yeah, and almost $400 for three car, like, die-cast cars is, like, mind-boggling steep to me.
Yeah. I agree, but that is also the world we live in right now because exclusivity sucks.
Yep. I did get the 124 scale Byron win, though, shocking.
Oh, I'm so everybody's surprised. So what is that, two you've got this year, the 500 and this one?
So far, yeah. We'll see what Darlington Throwbacky does this year. If he wins that one, I'll probably end up getting that one, too.
We should be getting close to finding those out.
I think I saw one or two announced this week.
I was going to say, I think there's at least been a couple announced so far. I don't remember what they were now. But yeah, should be getting close to hearing most of those because we're getting close to Darlington.
The Chase Elliott one was announced like a long time ago.
Yeah, we're only a month from Darlington, so you would think we'd start hearing a bunch of them here shortly. But yeah, Chase's junior throwback, that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's only 32 days away from the race, and there's nothing on Darlington's website about him.
Yeah, so I'd imagine we're going to start hearing about those soon, but I don't know. You would think, if there's only a month left, but...
Here's an article from March 20th that's everyone so far. Oh, Josh Berry's announced his recently, like in the past week or two.
What was his?
It is Rodney Childers 1998 late model.
I don't remember seeing this. I'll flash it up on screen right now for everybody that hasn't seen it yet.
But that one and Chase's are the only ones in the Cup Series so far. As the number four car for Haas, I feel like you could have done something more interesting than Rodney Childers relate model. But
yeah. Oh, I see it.
It's just me.
What's weird to me is they didn't change the font of the four and to match Rodney's 54 font.
Yeah. Teresa Earnhardt probably owns the font.
Probably. I mean, see, that's the thing, though, because, like, there's always these, you always get a few throwbacks every year where the sponsor throws a fit and doesn't want their colors changed. So they basically do the scheme, but they still use the colors of their sponsor, and it doesn't look right, ever. I've never known of a team being against changing something that's theirs.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they wouldn't have changed the number font to match the font of the paint scheme, because everything else looks accurate.
I'm still mad about the Trackhouse Coca-Cola throwbacks from a couple years ago and that we couldn't get diecast of them because Coca-Cola is like, no.
Yeah.
I'll never not be mad about that. I would have bought both of those, probably as an elite version.
I would have at least bought 1/64 of them. I try to stay away from clean versions anymore. The only things I generally buy in 1/24 anymore are race versions.
That's fair.
Because if I didn't, I'd probably end up spending way too much money.
Way too much more money than you already
Exactly.
do.
I've cut back on my die casts a lot recently. In fact, I've been selling a lot of them lately. In fact, I think one of them is back there on your set now.
Sure is.
Yep.
The dual signed Byron one.
Yep. But yeah, so getting close to Darlington. Hopefully we see some more throwbacks soon.
Only a month away.
Yeah. Xfinity. Eric Almirola, second start of the season for JGR, picks up the win. Great to see him finally putting it in victory lane. He made the comment in victory lane that he's had an asterisk next to his name all these years for winning an Xfinity race with JGR, and he could finally actually win one. Do you know the story on that?
No. Oh, wait. Remember. No, is that the one that, like, Denny Hamlin hopped out the car halfway through or something?
Yeah, because he had to go somewhere for a cup race or something. I don't remember exactly why he got out, but Almirola filled in for him, and Almirola won the race. I think it was at Milwaukee.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But because Denny started the race, he was credited with the win and the points and everything. Yeah.
That's a weird way of scoring that. Sure, we'll have the guy that started the race and not the guy that actually won the race.
That's how it always was. So back in the day, like if you were injured or something, you would start the race and then come down pit road on like lap one or two or the first caution or whatever, change out. But that way, since you took the green flag, you got the points.
Oh, man. Like when Dale Jr. got a concussion or Kyle Busch broke his leg. Imagine if they just had broken leg Kyle Busch go out there right? for a lap.
But yeah, cool to see Eric finally get that. Eric's a good dude. And I think has always been better than what his career stats showed. The issue with a lot of his career, even in the SHR days, was I don't think had the equipment underneath him. Like everybody was looking at SHR as this big powerhouse. And most of the time that Almirola was there, outside of Harvick, nobody was doing anything. So
yeah,
I've always thought Almirola was better than what his stats made him seem. And I think we're finally seeing that now as he's jumping in this JGR car. I mean, it's the best car in the field. So if he's got the talent, he should be winning in it. And he led a lot of laps last week at Richmond, came home second, and goes out and dominates this one, leads the most laps at 148, and wins. Now, that wasn't without competition late in the race. Chandler Smith was very fast again. Sam Mayer was right there as well. Got to give a shout-out, though, to Carson Quappel. First Xfinity start in that 88 car for Junior Motorsports and finishes fourth.
Yeah,
second
him and,
highest Junior Motorsports car in the field out of the five.
Him and Bubba Pollard and their two starts this year have been really fast.
Yeah, because Pollard finished, what, sixth last week at Richmond? Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully we see both of them more. Because that's two guys that for a while now have shown they are very talented at the late model level and just really haven't gotten the opportunities. Like Carson ran a few ARCA races last year, but it wasn't in the best car, so he didn't really get to show off his talent that much.
Is Carson related to Travis Quappel?
Yeah, it's his son.
Okay, cool.
He ran a truck race last year. What truck race did he run? Oh, he was in the Spire 7 last year at Bristol, finished 12th.
Oh, that's cool.
I forgot about that. And then ran one main ARCA race last year at Kansas, finished second. Three ARCA East races last year, best finish of 11th. But
yeah,
every one of those races had some sort of a mechanical issue.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's cool to see, like, you know, Carson Quappel, and he's been really fast in all of his NASCAR starts, and like Connor Zillish, like there's some of these guys that are young and up and coming that are doing really well in their first starts.
Yeah, no, it's good to see. I think the future is very bright for NASCAR right now. And also,
maybe we can finally get rid of Ricky Stenhouse.
Maybe. Let's talk about Sheldon Creed. Sheldon Creed was very fast in this race and was right there at the end. I believe started third on the last restart. And I'll give him credit. He sent it into turn one, three wide into turn one. Unfortunately, I think he sent it a little too hard, washed up the track, and kind of screwed over his finish as well as somebody else. I don't remember who he washed up the track with, but kind of screwed both of them over. But now, granted, he screwed himself over on that, but I will give him credit for going for it. That's more than I can say for Ty Majeski. So kudos to Creed. Like, no, he didn't win the race, and he kind of made a little bit of a bonehead move, but he at least went for it. That's what I want to see out of any driver. If you are there with the opportunity to win a race, especially your first race, take that chance. Even if it doesn't work out, I would rather see you take that chance and not get the win than just ride there in second and never make a move.
Tune in next week when somebody makes a bonehead move and deletes the leader trying to go for the win. Garth's like, I don't know why you would do that.
Don't call me out on my hypocrisy. But no, like, this is the kind of thing that I want to see out of a driver. If I'm a team owner, that's the kind of thing I want to see out of a driver. If I'm looking for a driver to hire, I would hire Sheldon Creed in a hot second over Ty Majeski. Wouldn't even think about it.
Interview questions if Garth is a team owner. Will you go for the win? Yes? Okay. Are you intimidated by Rick Hendrick? Yes? Oh, that's no.
So I keep going back to the whole... Remember when Chip Ganassi, when he hired Ross Chastain, his whole thing was, I like winners. I don't think Chip Ganassi would like Ty Majeski.
No. It's probably why Chip Ganassi never... Well, I guess Ty Majeski is probably too young for that level anyway. But yeah, Chip Ganassi, I don't even know if he would like Ross Chastain anymore because he likes winners and he doesn't like people that wreck. And Chastain does one or the other every week.
That's true. I mean, granted, Chastain still wins races, so I don't know. The last couple of years, he hasn't quite been the Chastain that we saw coming up, so I don't know. You might be right. He might... There might be some difference there. I don't know. I know I did see not long ago that Chip Ganassi wasn't ruling out ever getting back into NASCAR, so we may still see Chip Ganassi back in NASCAR one day.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know who he would take over, but there's so many competitive teams in NASCAR now. It's really nice to see.
Who says he has to take over anybody? If they get rid of the charter system, he can just start a team.
You know, pigs are going to fly by the time we get rid of the charter system. So.
Right. I mean, NASCAR wants to get rid of it. The teams are the ones fighting back on that.
Exactly. We're going to have two NASCARs by the time we get rid of the charter system.
Right. But anyway, speaking of Ty Majeski, let's move on to the truck race.
Oh boy.
Of which Christian Eckes dominated. So great job, Christian Eckes, leading 133 of 200 laps en route to the victory. Best car in the race, or best truck in the race by far. Absolutely deserve that win.
Look what happens when I don't check, or when I don't pick.
I know. Christian, what happened Eckes to your whole, I'm going to pick Eckes every week? As soon as you stop doing that, he's winning everything.
I got tired of being made fun of, and now Eckes is being a dick about it.
Well, see, this is the issue. You shouldn't worry about who's making fun of you or what, because then this happens, and now we're making fun of you for not picking Eckes.
Yeah, right? I'll pick him this week, and then they'll like finish 38th with a blown engine or something.
But yeah, great job to Eckes. A lot of speed out of Chase Purdy in this race. Finished third. I was very surprised by him. Not really been seeing much out of him this season. All of a sudden, he comes out, and he's pretty fast in this race. So, kudos to Chase Purdy. Now, Ty Majeski. Oh, Ty Majeski. He led 66 laps in this race, but when it counted, he pulled the same thing as he did at Atlanta. He could have moved Eckes late in the race. He could have gone for the win. He could have done something to go for that win. Did he? Absolutely not. He just rode around in second and came home with a good points day.
I think it's funny.
Sorry, but
difference.
I am getting really tired of Ty Majeski. And his whole attitude of, oh, as long as I run second, it's going to be okay. We're not in a system where I should be winning. Consistency is what matters.
I just think it's funny the difference between like the playoff format in NASCAR and like a full season points thing. Cause you know, Scott Dixon finishes second all the time, and people are like, this is how he wins championships. He finishes second every freaking week, yeah, and then he wins the championship. Then NASCAR were like, you finished second? You didn't try to delete the guy that was leading the race to win? Like, what the hell?
And that's the thing, though. Like, that's because that's the format we're under. I think Majeski is just living off in la-la land, thinking we're under some magical full-season points system like they used to be. And that running second every week is fine.
So, Steve, you do like the playoff format so that way people don't have to run second all the time.
Huh?
You do like the playoff format because it makes it so people can't run second all the time in championships.
I like people running the way that the current format says they should be running. Now.
Oh, man. Even when he doesn't like the rules, he wants people to play by the rules.
Well, yeah, because they're still the rules. Whether I like them or not, they're still the rules. Like, it doesn't change the fact, like, okay, so I just scrolled down to the bottom of the Racing Reference page to look at the full season points. Ty Majeski would be the points leader right now under a full season format. So if we were under a full season format, I would be singing Ty Majeski's praises right now, saying he's doing everything he has to do to win a championship. He is not doing everything he needs to do to win a championship under this format. And I'm really tired of him acting like he's doing everything he needs to do. Wins get you where you need to be to win a championship under this format. Running second every week and not even trying to win doesn't do that. I'm sorry, but it doesn't.
I love getting you riled up.
Oh, I was already riled up. I'm riled. That's the second time this season I've been riled up by Ty Majeski pretending like he's in a full season points format when he's not. I mean, if he wants to screw himself over, because he's not going to win the championship like that. Mark my words. If he goes the whole season and doesn't win a race because he's just been riding around like this thinking second to fifth is okay, he's not going to win the championship.
Did you know that Zane Smith is last in Cup full season points?
I did not. That's funny. Remember how we thought he was actually going to be better than the other Spire cars because he had that Trackhouse alliance?
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, right?
Zane Smith has 2 lead lap finishes in 8 races this year.
I mean, realistically, it's not been a great start to the season for any of those Spire cars. Like, LaJoy and Hosovar have both been pretty slow most weeks also.
Yeah. Dillon is 31st in full season points.
Nice. So I don't know if adding the third car with Zane is putting too much of a strain on Spire and they weren't ready for that or what. And they're not getting the help from Spire that maybe they were supposed to. I don't know.
I feel like the Cup program for Spire was going to take a little while to develop anyway. And probably
it already was though. Like, look, Corey LaJoy was a legit threat on super speedways and he still is to an extent, but I haven't noticed Corey as much at Daytona and Talladega this year.
That's super speedways, though. That's a completely different category, in my opinion.
Right, but the past 2 or 3 years, you could count on Corey being up there at the front at the end of those races.
Yeah.
I don't remember him being at the front for either of those races this year. Like, he might have been, but I don't remember him being.
I think he was running well at Daytona and then got, like, caught up in a wreck or something.
That could be.
Tend to forget those, but... Now that you brought up full season points, it's really interesting to look at for Cup. It's Larson, Truex, Hamlin, Byron, Blaney, top 5. Elliott, Gibbs, Chastain, Reddick, Bowman, top 10.
Okay. That sounds about right.
And then, like, Joey Logano's 14th. Keselowski's 18th.
Fords have not been too existent to start the season.
No, that's a bit of an understatement, too. Yes. There's one thing to not be existent, and then there's another thing to just be awful.
I mean, other than Blaney, Blaney's been decent. I mean, what'd you say? He was 5th in points?
Yeah. Logano's been fast sometimes. Doesn't have the results for it, but...
Yeah, which... Also, I brought this up before the show, but I do find it funny that Blaney, 5th at Martinsville. Logano, 6th at Martinsville. Where was Austin Cindric? 23rd.
Actually, since you said that earlier, I saw something really funny on Facebook. It said that Austin Cindric is the Austin Dillon of Ford.
You know... That's actually accurate in a lot of ways because he got his ride from nepotism just like Austin Dillon did.
And he's just as good in that car, too.
Yep.
Well, Austin Dillon's actually worse this year, but yeah, same thing.
Not by much.
It is an RCR versus a Penske, though. So
I did see an article the other day that was saying that RCR has been off this season because Kyle is barely in the playoffs right now and Austin's... Where'd you say 31st?
Yeah.
So they're like, what does RCR need to do to get back to where they need to be? And every single comment was, fire Austin Dillon.
Quit pretending that Austin Dillon is your generational driver that's going to be the guy for all the setups and everything. You know, it's like what they said when Kyle Busch came over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that Austin Dillon was number one driver and Kyle Busch was going to be number two. I'm like, how the hell? That's right. Like, if I showed up to Red Bull and they were like, well, that guy's going to be number one driver and Verstappen's clearly number two. It's like, yeah. What? No.
Oh, but remember, though, you're a prodigy on NASCAR Heat, so they might say that.
Not on Heat 5. I freaking suck at Heat 5.
Okay.
I don't know what I did between Heat 4 and Heat 5, but I can't. I don't know. It's terrible.
Well, I don't know if there's anything you did. It's that Motorsport Games f***ed up Heat 5. Because Heat 4 was the last one 704 actually put out independently. Heat 5 was after Motorsport Games had bought 704. So they didn't do anything to it. They just basically updated the roster and the schedule.
I think it's a controller thing, but four laps into the race, my right front tire is at like 12% tire length.
No, I think that's just normal. Because the right fronts wear super fast for no reason in that game.
I'm about to go find like a, I don't know, modifieds or wing sprints right rear tire and slap it on the right front and call it a day.
My favorite comment, though, from that RCR article was somebody said they need to give Austin a no responsibility job in the office.
I don't even know what he could do. Like, go get everybody coffee, but he's still going to be late.
Make up a position for him. Just make up some title that doesn't exist. It doesn't have any responsibilities. And just say, here, Austin, you're in management now at RCR. You're a general manager of racing strategies.
Oh, great. That's going to work out.
That was the best thing I could think of that might not have responsibilities.
I mean, the only thing I could think of is that he could go run and get everybody's coffee, but he's still going to be late.
General office manager. And he's basically, he just goes and gets everybody's coffee or whatever. And just, he's there to boost morale.
Resident spoon fed baby.
Yeah. Oh, we are a long way into this now, so we should probably get to our picks. Let's look back on last week's picks. I forgot to do them after each race, so we'll just quickly go through them all here again now, which, I mean, maybe this is the better way to do it, just going through them all right now and then going to our next picks. The truck picks after Martinsville, somehow with stage points, my pick, Taylor Gray, finishes sixth. Tyler's pick, Corey Heim, finishes 10th. But somehow, Tyler gets one more point than me from this race and now has a 27-point lead heading into Texas.
It happens.
Xfinity, your boy picked the winner. So I extend my Xfinity lead by a lot.
Yeah,
and now have 21. A, 37-point lead?
Yeah. You got all but one point that you could have gotten in that race.
Yep. That's right. Eric did good for me. That was my first winner of this season, and yet I'm still that far ahead of you.
I'm not very good at Xfinity.
Apparently not. And then on to Cup, neither one of us did super well. Truex did you dirty there, though.
He did.
And I retake the Cup points lead by 3, thanks to Alex Bowman's 8th place finish in Martinsville.
You know, right, Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano hadn't choked it earlier this year.
Well, yeah, that's true. They weren't doing you any favors either.
No.
No F1 this weekend, and I don't believe there's any IndyCar this weekend. No, they're Long Beach is next week. So just 3 Cup race or 3 NASCAR races.
3 Cup races.
That, we're back in 2020 on the COVID schedule.
Is one of them virtual?
Yeah, probably. I actually enjoyed those races. I'm kind of sad they got rid of the iRacing Invitational series. Those were fun.
They even like made it so you could get diecast and stuff out of it.
If you look behind me there, slide the chair around a little bit here. Timmy Hill right there, that's his Texas iRacing win.
Of course you got that one.
Of course, why wouldn't I?
You didn't want Dale Jr.'s IndyCar?
Did they make that one?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, okay, we'll put it this way. I'd never had a green light diecast ever until I got Newgarden's 2023 Indy 500 win.
They're okay.
But now I've got the podium finish 164th set coming as well. So
nice.
Yeah. So that, I think that shipped yesterday, so that should be here soon.
Nice.
I like how it's over 10 months from the race and they're just now shipping those.
Okay, so it used to be with Greenlight, they would announce the paint schemes for, say, 2014. They announced all the paint schemes, and they would produce them so that they delivered to dealers at the beginning of May.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time you had the
500,
the first time you had the opportunity to buy a diecast was at the GP and at the 500. So they just like sold a billion of them, and then nobody ordered them online.
Okay. I mean,
which is kind of the way to do it. I mean, right before your biggest event, and then now they come in like August ish.
Do they? Okay.
Or no, I got Rossi's 23 scheme. It delivered the week of the 500.
Okay. So like,
that's
they're
acceptable, but
yeah, I mean, they're doing better than Lionel. Lionel is about 6 to 8 months from the time they announce something to when it ships. Unless it's something they know is super popular. Like most chase cars ship a little quicker than that, or
oh, thank God.
Yeah.
The shipping on Chase Elliott's cars are faster than Chase Elliott.
Right. All right. So three races from Texas this weekend. Trucks will be Friday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1, the SpeedyCash.com 250. Tyler, who's going to pick up that Speedy Cash on Friday night?
I'm going to go with Nick Sanchez. I think Nick Sanchez probably should have won this race last year and kind of got robbed. He led most of the race and, I mean, was really fast the entire day. So I think he's going to pick up where he left off last year and actually finish it this year.
I'm going to go with Nick's quasi-teammate. Kyle Busch is back in this race in the 7, so how do you not pick Kyle Busch? He's probably going to win. So I'm gonna try to cut into Tyler's truck point lead with that. That's my ace in the hole is Kyle Busch.
It's been working out for you so far.
It has. All right, Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. The Andes Frozen Custard 300 for the Xfinity Series. Tyler, who takes home that sweet, sweet custard with the win?
I see what you did with the custard there. You pointing at Cole Custer?
I don't know. Did you pick Cole Custer? You probably should have.
I didn't, but I probably should have. I'm going to go with Justin Allgaier. Believe he did pretty well here last year. I think he's got 2 top fives in a row at Texas. But he's been doing pretty well so far this year too, and just doesn't have the results every week to prove it. He's kind of ups and downs, but I think he's going to try to make a run for a championship this year, and he'll pick one up at Texas.
I mean, he was going to win Phoenix until his right rear decided, nope.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I picked him that week too.
I think you did. I'm going to go with Jesse Love. Jesse has been super fast to start the season. In fact, most weeks has been better than the special talent that is Austin Hill.
Special.
I think, huh?
Special.
Yeah. Somebody in the Discord likes to call him a special talent. So that's been the running joke. I think Jesse finally picks up his first win of his career. I say finally, and it's not even that far into the season or his Xfinity career, but I think he picks up his first Xfinity win this weekend at Texas, first of probably a few he's going to have this season with the speed that he has had. Jesse Love wins at Texas.
Texas.
That's right. On to Sunday, the Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. I don't have a good pun for this one. Tyler, who wins the cup race?
I'm going to go with Bubba Wallace. As we mentioned earlier, he's been having a lot better speed this year than he did last year. And last year, he finished third in this race and led over 100 laps. So I think he's got a really good shot at picking up what would be his, third cup win?
Yeah, third.
Third? So, yeah, I think he can get it done this weekend.
Okay, fair enough. I think that's solid. I'm going to go with his team owner, Denny Hamlin. Fast start to the season for Denny. Already has one win under his belt, although some would contest that that win was legit. I think he picks up win number two for the season at Texas. What are you whispering over there?
He has two wins.
He does?
He and Byron are the only one that won multiple races.
What was the other race he won besides Richmond?
I don't know. Probably some mid-ass race that sucked.
Either way, okay, so he'll pick up win number three this weekend at Texas and be the winningest driver to start this season. You're right, he does. He won at Bristol.
Yeah.
Okay. I forgot about that already.
Okay, so a good race that was terrible at the end.
Yeah, right? I don't even remember. That was another race where he beat Truex.
Of course.
Oh, that's right. That was the race because of the tire wear. Those two and Keselowski were the only ones that were even like halfway close to winning at the end. That's right. Okay. That's right. Okay. Yeah, those are our picks for this weekend. Who you got for this weekend? Leave in the chat or down in the comments who you think is going to win this weekend at Texas. I just like saying Texas. And we will see you next week to talk about Texas and look ahead to next weekend's racing as we officially I'm not going to finish that thought because that was incorrect. Anyway, have a good weekend. Enjoy Texas as much as you can, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place. At that, I'm Garth. That's Tyler. That's Doc. And this is the Rookie Stripes podcast on Racing News Now.